Hello and welcome to this special episode of Mission Makers, brought to you from Davos, Switzerland, during the World Economic Forum, where me and my team were really lucky to be on the ground curating some amazing spaces and discussions this year, from the future of mobility with the astronaut Nicole Stott, who has spent over 100 days in space, to curating workshops around neuroscience and primal movement at the House of Balance, where I exclusively premiered my music track Infinite Being that features Deepak Chopra. I'll be interviewing key visionaries and thought leaders from these communities, such as the Female Quotient, 100 Women at Davos, Finnish Flow, and many more over the next few weeks to share the best of our collaborative insights on implementing solutions while digging deep into our collective consciousness to take responsibility for the protection and preservation of this world. So today I'm joined by AY, who is a very interesting musical artist, sustainability advocate and entrepreneur whose path I crossed earlier this year in Davos. And when you meet a fellow musician in Davos, you just know they're going to be doing something mind-blowing. And with AY, he certainly set the bar very high in how creativity can be used as a medium for impact and how artists should really challenge the notions of how they tour. So AY uses solar batteries to power his concerts, known as the Battery Tour, of which more than 800 shows have already been powered by. He's been recognised by the UN as a young leader for his contribution and leadership to the United Nations 17 Sustainable Development Goals because not only of his Battery Tour, but also his musical album, which is called Project 17. And essentially, he's produced 17 songs, each one representing a different goal set by the UN. And each track is then performed by a huge artist such as Ellie Goulding. Each song is then supported by a sponsor such as Samsung or Verizon, and then supports a non-profit organisation like the National Wildlife Federation and the Plastic Pollution Coalition. So AY challenges you, the listener, to plug in and take action no matter how small the step is. It could be as simple as recycling an old phone or taking the train instead of flying. You don't need a million followers to make an impact. So let's dive in and also hear about his Davos experience.
AY, welcome to Mission Makers. How are you doing today?
Yo, I am doing great. I'm here.
Where is here? Tell us.
Yeah, I am. Well, I'm definitely on the Battery Tour about Project 17. And I'm in Kansas right now at the Faraday Studios. with my implementation partner and the, you know, meeting different partners that are changing the world.
Yes, quite interestingly, we were joking offline. It's a bit of a coincidence. We both make music or hang out in a place that Michael Faraday once invented a few things in, which is kind of serendipitous.
But use it together. I said, it's crazy you do music. People don't know from the podcast. Y'all need to know. You be doing stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. So I was really happy to kind of learn more about what you're doing in Davos. Super interesting. So do you want to tell our audience a little bit more about the whole project and like your background and like how it all began and how's the experience been so far?
Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh, we should open this podcast with like my video. Like it just gives you everything that I do. But like, I mean, dude, essentially I just do music for like impact, you know? Like I just use music to fund impact. So I started something called the Battery Tour. And I do, you know, all my concerts, kind of like you probably do a bunch of concerts or shows, but all powered by clean energy, and then I built a solar box and I started using the concerts to raise money to send like one person or one like village access to energy around the world, you know? So that's the Battery Tour. And then now I'm a young leader and I've launched this thing called Project 17. There's so much more that I'm doing, but started out just basically, hey, music to power impact, you know?
Interesting. And we'll definitely talk about some of the other stuff, but talking about the battery stuff. So what are the logistics like around that? How scalable is that? How does it work? And can other artists adopt a similar thing?
Yeah, well, you know, so I powered over like 900 concerts. Close to 1,000 now in the last like maybe 4 or 5 years around the world. So yeah, I mean, I'm not like, you know, Coldplay level big or Billie Eilish big, but it is possible. And I'm hoping to not only be an example, but to show the way of how other artists can be more sustainable or regenerative. I like the word regeneration because that's like bringing life, you know, so how we could be more regenerative artists in general by doing it. And then obviously providing the technology, but essentially what am I doing? I'm storing energy in batteries, right? Like when I remember I got off a TV show called X Factor. Do you know X Factor?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. People think Simon mean, but he's not that mean, you know what I'm saying? He was actually cool. So yeah, like Simon Cowell, Britney Spears, Ellie Reed, like those are my judges, you know what I'm saying? Like in 2012. And I learned a lot, like mentors, you know? And so I was trying to like open up for major artists. And you probably go through this, right? Like you try to open up for some big name artists and they're like, how many followers do you have? You know? Or well, at least that's what they were hitting me with. Or how many tickets has your last tour sold out? It's like, no, I haven't even been on tour yet. I don't have an agent. I just want to do what I love to do. And I obsessed over, well, you know, well, screw this. I think we should be doing what we love to do every day. We should be doing what we're passionate about. Right. I don't think life is here for us not to do what we love to do. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, well, how can I power a concert anywhere? You know what I'm saying? And I obsessed over like energy. And I found out, oh my gosh, energy is the base resource. Like it's in our food, it's in our water, it's in that, right? You gotta have energy. And if you store enough energy, you can power anything, right? And so I started storing energy in batteries in 2012. And I started doing the battery tour.
And so can you just rock up to any venue and they would be using your energy source, or like how do you work with a venue?
Yeah, well
How's
that's what's getting complicated. You're like, well, you know, see, it's in your mind. You're like, oh, well, he's going to venues and he's just, no, venues are actually ran by fossil fuels. They're actually tied to the grid. You know, this is why you're probably just now hearing about me 10 years after I started the battery tour versus 10 years ago. Because, you know, people would even say stuff like, well, a real artist doesn't play on the street corner. You know, it's like, well, I guess because I'm not your man. So you know, at the end of the, you know, so yeah, I mean, parks, you know, places, shopping place, whatever, outdoor, you know, some festival. You know, it was technically the Battery Tour was always a festival. I just did it anywhere I could. There are a lot of times where I did, you know, do a venue or do a stage performance and bring some of my, you know, batteries and inverters and things like that and powered everything on stage, or you know, even brought my own equipment. Similar to what DJs do when they do parties or whatever, into a venue on the stage, and then plug that into my, you know, sustainable stuff. But ultimately, you know, I've been bringing a paradigm shift to the industry since 2012. It's not built for what I'm doing. It's not built for this, you know. So one reason why it's been so hard and the path's taken so long, you know, of course, I'm an artist. I'm an entertainer. I love to be on the stage in general, and I want it, you know. But you know, my goal has always been to reimagine how we do entertainment and to make a difference with music.
So beautiful. And so talking about kind of, you know, life's purpose and all of these, you know, very important things that we're hopefully all on a quest to. What has been the whole design thinking and the journey around like the album and using the 17 SDGs as a kind of a vehicle for a message through music?
Yeah, do most of your users know what the SDGs are or something? Because that's a weird wording.
Well, yeah, true. SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals set up by the UN. So definitely look them up. I mean, I'll hand over to you because you're a representative now, I guess. So.
Well, dude, yeah. Well, anyone who's listening, like these 17 goals, I didn't know what they were 2 years ago. Like I had no idea. Like the secretary, so imagine me, I did the battery tour, powered over 800 concerts at the time. I actually brought energy to 17 countries. So I was coming back from like Honduras. I was doing like concerts in villages that didn't even have electricity, you know what I'm saying? It was mad crazy. And then I got a call from like the Secretary General, and they were telling me about these goals, see the goals. And I'll have all AY, you're achieving goal 7 because you're getting people clean energy. And I was like, yeah, exactly. Goal 7. Like that's something. They're like, oh, you're achieving goal 13 because you're doing a concert, but you know, you're not hurting the world. Climate action is goal 13. So they were so they designated me as one of the 17 United Nations young leaders, right? And when we all represent the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, and we're all supposed to have like a project or whatever projects that the UN supports. And so I tell people it took me 30 seconds to figure out Project 17, but it's really a lifetime of doing what I've been doing my whole life, which is music for impact, right? right? I would do a concert, someone got energy, I would, right? So I looked at the goals and I remember telling the Secretary General, like, bro, I was like, bro, more people know Johnny Depp's relationship, you know? More people knowing Kim Kardashian post, bro, than if you just like, if you're like, hey, what's goal five? You know what I'm saying? Like, this is crazy. So I was like, we got to fix this, man. So one song for each goal, you know, but each song with a major artist, like plugged into the, you know, the goal they care about, right? To sing or rap about whatever they care about. If Cardi B's into, you know, gender equality and she raps on there. Paul McCartney cares about bringing the world together, then he sings on goal 17, right? And then I was like, okay, well, I need to be Robin Hood of the music industry, right? I got to be able to own the music so I can give it away to make impact. Right. So I need 17 sponsors. I need brands to line up with a goal that they care about. Right. Like, if you care about, you know, BNP Paribas is one of the brands that just came on there. One of the biggest banks in France, General Motors has came on board as one of the 17 sponsors. Right. So they all have a goal that they care about. And that way I can give 75% of the music away to what I call implementation partners that do the work, right? That get people food, water, or in this case where I'm at, education and through science, which is like, you know, the Faraday Studios here in the Midnight Science Club. So, yo, that's what Project 17 is. It's 17 songs, 17 brands, you know, sponsors, 17 implementation partners, 17 major sustainable development goal impacts around the world.
No, that's incredible. And also really interesting to hear that you didn't go with a label in order to then kind of maximize the amount of impact that you can have in, you know, with hopefully not giving away as many rights. How easy or how difficult was it to put this all together and get buy-in from sponsors and stuff and yeah, other artists as well who are collaborating?
Definitely not easy. What you doing? This is a lifetime, girl, you know. So like,
that's short great.
You know what I'm saying? Short answer is this, it's a lifetime. You know, like I said, I told people it took me 30 seconds to think of Project 17, and it was a vision then. And that was still 2 years ago. So it's still taking 2 years for the vision to fully really begin to materialize. Like and I don't have 17 yet. I said BNP Paribas, which is official. I have General Motors. Obviously, people see the support from Samsung and others, but that's not 17, right? Like, we have Tech N9ne, the number one independent artist in the world. We, you know, I was at COP. That was great. People see it on my Instagram. Ellie Goulding came up to me and like literally said, hey, I want to be on the project. She cares about goal 14, but she's not on the record yet. And there's not another 17 artists, right? We only got like three major artists. So for one, we're not there yet, right? We got like 14, 15 more steps to go. And so that's the beautiful thing about this project is 17. I'll say that overall, it's been 10, you know, 11 years of work though to get here, right? Like, yeah, I would, you know, so I start, you know, 8 to 10 hour shows every day, Monday through Saturday for like 10 years. You know, it's craziness, right? Concerts on the street corner, parking lots, places where, you know, sometimes it was five people, sometimes it was 50, sometimes it was 500, you know, lugging the batteries for 2 miles down roads in Honduras and Haiti because I'm taking the, I'm trying to do a concert in the village that doesn't even have water that's clean. You know, like how hard has it been? Pretty hard, you know what I'm saying? But, happy to be here now.
Well, there are no such thing as overnight successes, and if they are, they're very far and few in between. And sometimes the easiest part is, you know, having the vision. The most difficult part is the execution and the craftsmanship required to build up to that point.
Yeah, the drive and the sacrifice, you know, right? Like how much time sacrifice away from, say, family, or I call them human normal thing, like where you're like working or doing a podcast or you're doing your music or you're traveling. Like there's a sacrifice people have to
and there's always something to do. Like, you know, you can never be bored if you're working at this level of output. So why Davos? You know, when did you start coming there, and what was the kind of primary objective and primary goals?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. My primary goals, they've always been the same, at least the last 2 years. But in general, it's always been to get the world plugged in. It's always been to power music or power impact with music And right now I'm only doing one thing, and that's probably 17, right? So until we get 17 sponsors and 17, you know, and then, you know, and we do the 17 concerts that I want to do next year, and we complete the 17 episode docuseries that's documenting each goal and what, you know, the people are doing and the goal and the impact, right? I'm not done. So, you know, Davos, of course, is the place to go, right? I mean, talking about the World Economic Forum, a place where all the richest people in the world gather, you know, essentially, right? You know, all these leaders and stakeholders in different countries are all there, corporates, brands, artists. That's where I met Will.i.am. I met him at the World Economic Forum, shook his hand, we talking, he put his number in the phone, you know, so I went there to go get, you know, more brands, more sponsors, more implementation partners that do the work, you know, NGOs, more, you know, to plug in. And I was blessed, you know, Hedera came and sponsored my trip there. They're a major corporation, was able to pitch and launch Project 17 all over Davos, did a ton of performances where I was able to perform some of the 17 songs. I have all 17 done, just not all 17 artists, but they're done. So, you know, performing around Davos and, you know, getting this project connected to outlets that could potentially power it for change.
And that's exactly where our paths crossed. And so what have been some of the impacts, you know, of being there? And what would you say were your key takeaways from this year?
Yeah, dude, Davos is awesome. The impact's amazing. You know, it would be my second Davos. I went to the last one. It was the summertime one. I don't know. Did you go to that one? Were you there?
I was there. Yeah, I was there in May. Yeah, big time. I've been living there for the last 3 years, actually, in on off. And May was amazing. It was very different, of course. Much easier to get around.
Different Davos is like, holy crap. Like, they were totally different.
So different. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. And I wondered for you, like, how, you know, why do you keep going and how is it fitting? I guess we met each other, right?
Yeah, definitely. I reckon, you know, people, I'm sure, you know, people who haven't been there or just like your community or network, like probably have quite a lot of questions and curiosity, assumptions. And actually, that's why I started this kind of debrief series from Davos, just to kind of air these conversations that maybe people aren't all exposed to and stuff, to really dispel myths. But I, you know, there is of course the official WEF and what happens, you know, behind closed doors over there, and then there's of course, you know, so many amazing brands are all kind of attending WEF and have events going on, right? And For me, the fact is you have some of the world's most brilliant minds gathering in a place for 7 days, 5 days, whatever it is. And you just wouldn't meet that kind of amount of people in one place that are just so like insane in what they're doing. Some good and some bad, obviously. And
it's of course, like, boom. Right.
Like literally, you know, one morning you could be having breakfast with an astronaut and in the afternoon, you walk in to, where was it, Hedera House, the AOI performing, like, it's crazy, right? And so for me, it's the opportunity. I think, first of all, if you have something to say, then this is the place to say it, because there are, like, obviously so many of the right minds there who can help amplify your projects, who can help be your collaborators, be your friends. So yeah, that's why I'm going there. And it's super interesting. And this podcast was actually born in Davos in 2020, this whole podcast series. So we have a little something to say with that. And the house that I'm really sort of representing is House of Balance. I don't know if you had a chance to pass by there, but our whole kind of ethos is around connecting the global community that comes into the local village and kind of creating this Burning Man type of experience where nothing can be traded financially. Everything is based on value driven sort of currency. And, you know, as you'll probably know, like doing an event in Davos is beyond six figures. So to be able to like take away, the money from that equation is really incredible. Like to just see that happen for 7 days and your thinking is like totally shaken up, and it, money cannot be the primary driver for designing systems. So
it's, yeah, by beautiful place, and I'm glad that's a part of Davos. And yeah, just like she's saying, any listeners listening, yep, there's two different Davoses really, but they intersect too in a way, because like a lot of people will leave the main WEF and they'll go to the promenade and all those different areas, and they go to the houses. And of course, at nighttime, you can be just, you know, heading into what almost it turns to clubs, right? You would almost say dance parties. and you're bumping into like the CEO or the, you know, a billionaire or you know, some major artist or major political figure. I remember my first time at Davos in the summer series, heading into Davos, hopping on the train or whatever it was, bus, and it was the prime minister of Finland. You know, right? And we were jamming to my music and things. So that's Davos, right? And there's only one place for that. It is, there's a lot of world events. There's COP, there's, you know, things like Cannes Lions, etc. All these different, you know, there's events, but there, man, it's nothing like Davos, right?
Definitely. Huh? The debrief definitely happens on the dance floor. And so what do you think are like some of the biggest misconceptions around this particular place and time?
Hey, I hope you're enjoying today's show. And of course, if you are, a little review or share with your friends would be much appreciated. But I just want to take a quick pause to share some interesting news that Mission Makers has unexpectedly grown into becoming a boutique podcast agency. And for the last year and a half, we've secretly been producing content for some high impact brands, from tech unicorns in Silicon Valley to disruptive companies at Davos. So if you're thinking of starting your own show and you're looking for some help, then send us a message, because we would absolutely love to bring your story to life and help you amplify your content while really connecting on a much deeper level with your audiences. Now, let's get back to the show.
Well, I think there's a reality with the misconception. Well, so I'm youth, right? I'm one of the youth leaders. And so I think that the youth voice needs to be heard at COP, at WEF, at Davos, at all these events, right? Because the youth is the future. And so I guess the way to answer that is because you asked me for misconceptions, so I'm not really answering your question. I'm saying, like, I think Davos could use, I guess I'm turning it into like what I think should be more of is more youth involved in it, or at least having a seat at the table. You know, I did the Swedish Lunch this year. I did, you know, the performance on the Top of the Hill thing with, you know, Molly McAdams and introducing leaders. And, it's great, but still, you know, want to get more culture and like and youth there. Misconceptions, maybe like people probably think it's, I don't know if people think because there's so many wealthy people, it's just an uppity event, or I don't know what. But false perceptions are out there probably, but people are people and humans are humans is what the way I see it. I mean, whether, you know, now it sucks if you meet someone who treats you differently because they are wealthy or well-known. And I don't think you should do that in general. Maybe that's not the best human, but, you know, overall, whether you have money or not, you know, we're all the same. We bleed red. We put our, you know, jeans on one leg at a time. And so, you know, this is definitely a place where you can connect that idea, dream, goal, passion, business to other humans that are like-minded, or you can bring value if you have value to present, and magic can happen for sure. So maybe there's a thought that, you know, you have to know someone. I didn't really know many people when I first came, but now I do. And I know people that come every year now, because I came with an open mind, open heart, and with what I thought was a good value proposition, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, many of us are passionate about changing the world. And in order to do that, you need to be in the place where some of those conversations are happening, whether they're positive or negative. But, you know, you got to be out there on the field to really make that action play. And it's obviously, you know, a place where the elements are in full force. What have been, and because of what you obviously, you know, sort of described and everything, and like who you just end up having most crazy, like thought-provoking conversations with, what have been maybe some of your life lessons that you've experienced going for the last couple of years?
I experience life lessons all the time. I'm trying to think of one.
Did you ever imagine that you'd be in a place like this, like a few years ago.
Yeah. Did I ever imagine I would be? No. You know, what you really imagine is like this vision that you have, whatever the vision is. Hey, I want to be a basketball player. I want to have an impactful business on youth. I want whatever you as a listener, you know, you have that vision, you take steps every day. When I, you know, wanted to do what I love to do every day, when I found out my why and what drives me and started using music as that vehicle, right? When I, you know, even launched Project 17, it was like one song for each goal. I didn't say, oh, I'll be in Switzerland for sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, ever. And so there's a lot of byproduct, right? Of you being hyper-focused and moving towards your goal every day and taking that step forward and remaining humble. You know, and grounded and rooted in truth and who you are, then there's byproducts of like, wow, now I'm in Switzerland and I'm gonna go skiing with some awesome people from Davos. Then some random event that also gets business done, because now you're skiing, you're talking about like, how do we reach the youth? And this is the prime minister of Finland, and now you're rolling out something, right? So like, no, you never really, like, I don't think you see it like that clear, but I think if you stay true, you know, you'll get surprised along. And so I get surprised all the time, and I'm shocked. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. So you know, to me, almost so many eureka moments. You learn a lot, you know, you iterate. Is a word that, you know, entrepreneurs use a lot. You know, you say iterate. I wouldn't say pivot as much. You don't always want to pivot a lot, but you know, sometimes you do that. But you iterate, you refine, you know, and you grow, right? You grow.
Mm, absolutely. And so you mentioned like knowing when you had this kind of calling to music. So how old were you, and like how did that sort of manifest itself?
Yeah, my story is crazy. It's long, it feels long now, but you know, it's crazy. I wasn't like four or something, and like was like, I'm doing music at four. Like, just people look, you know what I'm saying? They think that, you know, a lot of things, like, but it was built, you know, really what it was. I was an athlete. I played Division I basketball. I was homeschooled. I was a Boy Scout, Eagle Boy Scout. Those are all the things that like, built me, my parents, my family, watching my mom and dad, like change my neighborhood block by block, like kicking out drug houses, organizing and rallying block captains block by block, and then like literally bringing the city together block by block. You know, I watched them do that and change my city, and I'm just doing the same thing that they were doing. And, you know, they were, you know, block by block, city by city, and I'm kind of doing like country by country, you know, whatever, right? Like bringing the world together. So I think that's like the origin. And then you go, okay, when I was in high school is when I was like playing ball, and, you know, into high school, college. And I, you know, I really started diving into myself and figuring out my why and what drives me. And I knew it was music, because music was a way to reach people. It was the universal language, the vehicle that connects to everyone. And I thought I could do more with music than basketball as far as making a change. So I made the switch in like 24 hours and went right into music. And I took the concepts of basketball, which is like 10,000 hours. If you ever heard, have you heard of 10,000 hours?
Yeah, I got my 70,000 row.
You know, so anybody who's listening, like, you want to explain it, the concept of 10,000 hours? Like, what do you think of me? Like, tell me what you're
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's this old saying that, you know, to truly master a craft, you need to put in 10,000 hours of your time. So yeah, that's kind of in a short and sweet nutshell, you know.
Yes.
Ethos,
right? Rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. But I would chase like great players like Kobe Bryant, things like that, right? Like in the gym, you know, even when I play basketball, I would wake up, you know, shoot 500 to 1,000 shots in the morning, and then at night I practice another 500,000 shots, right? So you apply that, you go, okay, you know, people, that's why people go, oh my god, you're doing 8-hour shows, that's crazy. Well, you know, in America, at least where I live, you work at McDonald's or Wendy's or something, and you do a shift, it's 4 hours minimum, right? Full-time job's 8 hours. You definitely can't show up and be like, hey, I just worked 30 minutes. That's my set. Peace out. You'll get fired. So when I was like, okay, I want to do music, I was like, you know, full-time, 8 hours, let's go, like all day, you know? And then of course, I was always trying to catch up with, you know, when I play ball, I'll leave it at this, you know, I even thought 10,000 hours was like, you can dribble with your right hand and cross over to your left and shoot, and that's a 10,000 hour move. Then you dribbling with crossing to your right, you got to get another 10,000 hours in that, right? You know, you know, it's a lot of work you got to put in, you know. And so, you know, when I would go for the music piece, you know, I used to do, you know, yeah, I tried to put the time in. So yeah, I started late, like, you know, 19. I feel like it was late 1920. Got on the X Factor really quick, and then been putting the work in ever since, you know.
Wow, wow. And do you still play ball, or like, did you have to totally?
I mean, I don't play for like Division One or like a team anymore. Like, I literally, you know, knew that I had to put mastery hours in whatever I wanted to do and whatever I love to do to make it be something. And so I chose between the two, you know. I could, you know, but I still play ball for sure. Yeah, I think that's where I'm dancing from, you know.
nice and the style. So it's super interesting because on this show, like, we're about motorsports, music and business, and motorsports is because that's kind of like the sport that I grew up kind of really competing in and obsessing in, and like also wanted to be an athlete and all this. And then I got diagnosed with a motor coordination delay, and my journey changed. But it was amazing because in order to do what, like, obviously music is like so much about coordination, and motorsport is very much about coordination as well. But because, like, innately I was like getting podiums and, like, you know, playing the guitar and like all these things, I just knew when I got my diagnosis, like, it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not going to go to where I want to go. Maybe just the goalpost has to change, but it's still the same arena. And I need to find, you know, my calling or my happiness in something related to this. And for motorsport, it was really around kind of what you mentioned there, which is like the decoding of human performance, like through the mind of an athlete, and like just like that mindset is so empowering. And yeah, it's incredible. And so since you're a musician, I would love to ask, like, what, we have a lot of musicians, obviously you listen to this show, what is like the number one habit that you think is super essential for music producers, artists, whatever, to adopt?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that came to mind was one word. It's called Google. that's the number one. Like, I mean, I don't get, whether you're, you know, trying to play ball, whether you're trying to, you know, be an artist, whether you're trying to, honestly, with anything, entrepreneur, like, use Google. Like, so many people are like, it's like they're looking for a handout or like a cheat code to achieve their goal, you know, when a lot of times you can, you know, figure it out, right? Like, you know, you can figure out how your favorite artist is doing X or why this is there. Like, I can give 1,000 cases and scenarios, but I'll give you one, right? Some people will look at art. This also will help, like, if you start, you know, doing the process right, you actually will be less hard on yourself and can also, you know, be able to move faster or move forward correctly or make the right decision. So here's the thing. People will look at a big artist, like look at Chance the Rapper, and go, you know, well, why doesn't my music sound like Chance, or why am I not like Chance, or, you know, why am I not where Macklemore is, right? But when you start Googling and figuring out, well, what made Macklemore, what team, et cetera, then you'll find out, like, Macklemore's independent, yes, but look what he did as an artist, right? Now, I hear he got like $1 million loan. Now $1 million loan, not everyone can get that, right? You know, he didn't just blow up from thrift shop. He got a loan somehow from some investor that gave him $1 million that enabled him to then make the songs that you heard, Thrift Shop, Can't Hold Us, whatever. He also partnered with a guy named Ryan Lewis. And now one of the awesome things that he did to remain independent was he went and spent $300,000 of that money and marketed his album, essentially hiring out, I think it was like Def Jam or one of the labels, to distribute the album. And he had a $300,000 marketing budget, right, for his album, which is why it charted, because he technically had a record label facilitating the distribution of the album. So if I'm an independent artist without a budget of $1 million or having $300,000 to put into the marketing of my album, why would I compare myself to Macklemore or even the sound quality that he's producing at $1 million? Right? Doesn't make sense. It's gonna. I would have to probably have, you know, an equal shot at having all those pieces. I mean, look at Chance the Rapper and go, another guy who spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on marketing his album. We're not even talking about the cost of producing it. So you know, when you start figuring out and Googling things and finding out how the business of music business is done, you know, then you can start taking the appropriate steps. A lot of people aren't even Googling things, but they're expecting, right? Like, when artists hit me up all the time, and one of the questions I ask them is, do you know what a booking agent is? Right? If you don't know what a booking agent is, we have nothing to talk about. And what I was basically saying is, like, how can you say I want to be an artist, right? Which, if you want to be an artist, you have to know what the revenue streams are, right? You sell merchandise. If you don't know what a touring agent is, and really the primary way of how you do tour to make money, which is how you make money as an artist, then what are you doing? And you can Google that. You don't need help to find that. So I was basically using an example of, like, that's like a guy who's like, I want to have a construction company or a roofing business or whatever. And then I say, hey, do you know, have you heard of Home Depot or Lowe's? You know, and he goes, oh, I have no idea what DeWalt is or Home Depot. I've never heard of that. So how are you going to be a construction worker if you don't know what DeWalt is or what Home Depot is, or right, where you get the materials to then do construction? It makes no sense. So, you know, Google, right? Like, you could fix some of these things that artists need to know. You can just find the information. You're just too, you know, either lazy or, I don't know, busy or whatever it is, that you're not figuring out the very basic things to even be that thing that you say you want to be.
No, yeah, it's super true. I mean, you know, I've been in this game for 13 plus years. And, you know, when I started out, there was no such kind of Googling, YouTube, and the amount of information that's out there now. It's true. Like, if you're not bothered to do the quality research, like, obviously Googling doesn't just mean taking, you know, the first page. Like, it means, like, doing quality research and, like, and in uncovering things. It means, like, reading industry reports. You get, you know, so many associations who, like, literally give out a report of, like, you know, they spend the whole year, they have, like, a whole team analyzing all the key drivers, growths for, like, a particular genre of music. And yeah, so there really isn't any excuse. And I often find that those types of people are, like, they believe that their talent will be the only thing that matters. And unfortunately, it's not. It is understanding the game. It is understanding the game.
Fall out the sky and make their business work or their artistry work. Like, an artist is a brand, a brand is a promise. Like, an artist is a business too, at the end of the day. At least know the fundamentals. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying learn everything, but learn the fundamentals. If you want to be a construction worker, right? Like, if you want to do roofing for a living, you may need to know where to buy the roofing materials. Like, it's just simple things. You may want to know the names and the brands of the drills that you need to use, or the nail machines, like, just very basic stuff. So if you want to be an artist that does music for a living, you may want to know a few very basic things about that, right? Like, what a booking agent is, how you make money, where are the revenue streams, you know, what are the platforms? Like, those are things that you can learn by Googling, researching, and actually doing work, and not expecting something or someone to fall out of the sky to give you imaginary money that you think you deserve because you can sing well, or I can dance decently, or whatever. That can put you into a category of people that dance decently, but then there's a category of people that dance decently that have $100,000 behind them and a team. Then there's another category that has, right? It just keeps getting, there's just different levels of all of it. So, you know, we're not as special as we think.
Definitely. And to get to some of these levels, you also need to be able to network and speak that language. And if you can't speak the language of the game or the business, then you're not really on the same court, really, or you ain't able to hold the court. So final question is, what would you want to see change in the music industry this year? And then, like, 10 years from now or 5 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only way that I can answer that right now is it's just through me. Is like, dude, my goal is to be the number one, the number one, or the world's biggest, or however you want to put it, sustainable artist in the world, right? You know, and I think through me achieving this goal that I've set out to do is, you know, be this, like, the world's biggest sustainable artist, it's going to open up doors for other artists to reimagine how it can be done. You know, I've been doing it, powered 100% by clean energy. So that means it's possible, right? Like, it's possible to do a concert with 5, 10, 20,000 people and it all be powered by clean energy. Why? Because I've done it, right? And I've done it a lot of times. I did it without a lot of support behind me. So, you know, there's that. right, it's possible to make an album, with clean energy, because I've done that when Project 17, right? And, you know, so, you know, hopefully, like, you know, an example like what I'm trying to bring the world can start getting and continue to grow on the visibility of what's possible. And I think things can be reimagined and it could be done differently, just in how we do music, how we distribute it, how we connect it to people and audiences. And to be super honest, like, that's what I'm doing. So, I think the industry as a whole, because you're asking me an industry question, and I answered it, I guess, by talking about what I'm doing, but like the industry as a whole is still recovering from like COVID and touring and all of these things. And so I think they're in need of something new, something fresh, something that connects the youth together. And I think something like that's about more love and like togetherness. And music, I feel like music right now in the industry is really dark, to be very honest. Yeah, even the frequency of the music, you know, a lot of stuff's about it's a lot of depressing material and stuff that I wouldn't necessarily say is positive for youth. So yeah, I hope that the music industry, we start seeing new talent emerge that are like positive, more positive. You know,
definitely there needs to be more positive messaging in some of the things that we see, especially on a commercial scale, because that's reaching the most people and also sometimes the youngest ears. AY, thank you so much for joining us on Mission Makers. It was such a pleasure having you on the show, and I look forward to seeing you hopefully in London sometime soon or around the world.
Yeah, let's kick it in London. I'll be there soon with the Wizard.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, have a great day and speak to you soon.
Peace out.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we've enjoyed having this conversation. If you want to grab a copy of today's show notes, then head over to missionmakers.com/Davos, where you'll also find notes from all of our previous episodes. If you're interested in talking to me about future opportunities at Davos, producing podcasts, or coming down to some of my music and motorsports events, then you can reach out to me at missionmakers or at dj.n1nja on Instagram and TikTok. Thank you as ever for listening. The music played in today's episode is an exclusive preview of my upcoming track with Deepak Chopra, which was titled Infinite Being at Davos, and it will be coming out later this year. So until next time, keep it laser focused.
We call ourselves human beings, not human thinkings, or not human doings, but human beings. So now, as you're listening to me, if you would just try this, as you're listening to me, be aware of that which is listening. Even now, as a border, it's 47 billion light years away from us. But anything that doesn't have a border has to be infinite, which means I is infinite.